Hello, everybody. I'm Lou Dobbs. Welcome to the Great America Show. Great to have you with us. We're getting very little information out of Ukraine now over the past week. We know almost nothing about which cities are controlled by the Russian invaders and which are held by the Ukrainians. We have almost nothing in the way of credible casualty counts from either side, and there are no independent entities operating in active combat areas of Ukraine. We do know that the Biden White House wants Congress to put up $33 billion to support Ukraine in the war. Europe has done next to nothing for Ukraine and certainly hasn't put even a respectable fraction up of that $33 billion. It's time for all of us, mere citizens in this country, to make it clear to our lawmakers that they're not sending our troops to Ukraine. They're not about to put up a no-fly zone. And that Europeans, our good friends, are going to spend their money to support their neighbor. We're not going to allow these pitiful dipsticks we sent to Congress and the Senate to get us into a war that has zero to do with our national interest and which has maximum interest and impact for the European nations. And further, Americans aren't going to war to suit the fantasies of an impaired president and who we will never permit to be a wartime president under no circumstances. The Marxist left and the rhino liberals are as authoritarian in values and ideology as Vladimir Putin, in my view, and they seem to be trying to condition the country to accept the idea of war with Russia. In that direction lies war and ruin. We must pledge that this Biden regime will not succeed in their bloodlust. And now we have reports our government and its deep state leaders have expanded their ambitions of power and unconstitutional activities right here in our country. The Wall Street Journal reporting that the FBI conducted millions of warrantless searches of American citizens' data. The Office of National Intelligence disclosed the FBI over the past year did as many as 3.4 million illegal searches of data collected previously by Biden's national security staff. It just doesn't quit, and it won't quit until we, the people, make it so. The January 6th committee is going about its partisan witch hunt and inquisition and persecution of hundreds of Trump supporters, all caught up in the January 6th rally in Washington, the demonstrations that followed near and around the Capitol, and in some cases, the riots that extended into the Capitol. But we're also learning that police officers did much that day to provoke violence, and they committed violence against many of our fellow citizens who had every right to be where they were and doing what they did, demonstrating peacefully and orderly on the Capitol grounds. What happened that afternoon is a great tragedy. What has followed in the 16 months since is a national disgrace for which the Democrat Party leadership is morally responsible. Our guest today is defense attorney Joe McBride. He represents five of the defendants charged for their actions on January 6th. Two of his clients have been in jail for more than a year now. And I must say that what is happening in our court system and prison system to these defendants is an outrage. And it's hard to believe this is actually occurring in the capital city of this great nation. Joe McBride, welcome back to the Great America Show. We've been looking forward to your update on your clients and the other defendants, all charged with what in many, if not most, politically motivated charges. Thanks for being here, Joe.
It's good to be here, Lou, and I appreciate all the great work you do, as always. I have two clients who are still in pretrial detention, two of my five. One of my colleagues, John, represents John Kiyonaga. He represents about five people. I believe three or four of his guys are in as well. But my two guys have been in each for over a year. That would be Ryan Nichols and Christopher Quagler.
That is, it's disheartening to hear that. How serious are the charges that they face?
The charges are very serious. You have everything from, glorified trespasses to assaulting and resisting or impeding officers, federal officers, and inflicting bodily injury. These are accusations. There's, you know, there's a lot of accusations that officers were harmed that day by, you know, despite the fact that they were in full riot gear. If somebody pushed them, that was, you know, felonious assault on an officer. It's obviously these guys have been overcharged. And, you know, so they're overcharged with those things in terms of, you know, aggression. And they also are charged with the 1512, which is obstructing the governmental proceeding and a few other things. Any one of these charges can carry 10 to 20 years. All of them together, you're looking at, you know, a lifetime in jail if these situations aren't addressed the right way.
I've been in riots. I've been in mobs, and I know how quickly things can get out of hand. The mob, the riot, whatever it is, takes on a life of its own. It's a hard thing to explain if people have never been around it. But they've become less a group of not individuals, but a mob itself that is organ. You know, it's one organ out there, and people get pushed in one direction, they go the other. I would have guessed in any other circumstance that there were people who, you know, could have run into a police officer, did whatever, but the officers would have been very restrained themselves. Do you think that the police were restrained on January 6th there?
Absolutely not, Lou. The police were not restrained at all. What you have is a completely foreseeable disaster in terms of the amount of people who were guaranteed to show up that day. President Trump, at the time, a couple of weeks before the 6th, had reached out to Mayor Bowser and Nancy Pelosi and said, "Hey, look, you know, there's going to be a lot of people there. You guys probably want to accept the National Guard's help." They told him to go take a walk. And because they told him to go take a walk, the security fell upon them that day to secure the city and to secure the Capitol in a way that made sense. They did not do that. It was undermanned. It was understaffed. And, you know, people walked over from the Washington Monument up to the Western Terrace of the Capitol. There was no there was no signage. Most of the people who got there, any barricades that were down an hour before they arrived, the amount of people who showed up that day versus the cops who were there that day was just, you know, one throng of people versus a very shorthanded staff. So what did that shorthanded staff do? They listened to their superiors who said, "Hold down the fort." They created conditions for a conflict to ensue, and the police took massive aggression against innocent people. And that's demonstrated widely at this point on video by the fact that the police started firing flashbangs and tear gas into a crowd of people who were doing nothing but singing and chanting and praying. And because of that, what was otherwise a peaceful protest burst into a riot.
Flashbangs into a crowd that was not advancing toward the police or trying to break into the Capitol?
Oh, yeah. It's all, yeah, for sure. It's on video. You have people with their backs literally turned, and the flashbangs are dropping all around them. The gas is dropping all around them. They created chaos. And, you know, from that chaos, people were angry. People were like, "Look, we're just sitting here. We're just praying." You hear people mouthing off saying, "Hey, F you, what are you doing this to us for? We're on the same side. We're pro-police." And the cops just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Some people in the crowd pushed back, and before you know it was out of control.
And I assume that will be part of the defense for many of the people who were there on the Capitol, the protesters, and some of them, of course, rioters. Give us a sense of what the defense will be. I mean, if that happens in the way in which you're saying, Joe, that seems to me to be some provocation and some basis to certainly at least lessen charges and be more reasonable on the part of the prosecutors.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Unfortunately, in these cases, you have sort of two cohorts of lawyers. You have one cohort who just doesn't accept the fact that the cops acted maliciously. despite the fact that in their other caseloads, they're talking about what the cops do on a regular basis. But when it comes to January Sixers, for whatever reason, they're refusing to accept the idea that these people were attacked by the cops. And because of that, they just won't advance the theory in court. They won't advance it in their motions. And that's the vast majority of these people. And then you have a very smaller cohort of lawyers who are doing exactly what you're talking about here, and that's advancing the truth. But when you look at the mainstream media apparatus and their marriage to the Department of Justice and the narrative that's being put out into the public, it becomes an uphill battle real fast when you have that level of public perception buying into one narrative that's false against your clients. And then, quite frankly, you have members of the bench who are just, I mean, one of the judges called a guy a terrorist the other day, and Trump a charlatan in the middle of a hearing. You just, the level of animus that is being displayed, unchecked animus toward these people who are innocent until proven guilty, is unprecedented in American history. It's troubling, and it's very wrong.
It sounds horrific, frankly. A judge actually on the bench referred to the president as a charlatan, and these protesters, these rally goers, as terrorists.
Yeah, I don't want to get myself into too much hot water with him because I'm going to be in front of him again at some point. But yeah, you can just Google it. It's there. It's true. It happened. It's not only happened by this judge. It's happened by other judges as well. And it's concerning because it's supposed to be an objective bench. Lady Justice is supposed to be blind. People aren't supposed to be taking sides here, but clearly the lines have been drawn, and it's very unfortunate.
We were talking with one other attorney whose client was really very cooperative with the FBI in all aspects. And then suddenly a few months later, did nothing, literally did nothing. And it's on video doing nothing, and was charged, overcharged, as you say, and then had to go to trial. Despite all of that, there is an attitude in this, and I suspect it's because of the Democratic influence, the left-wing influence in Washington, D.C., on the courts there. I have to say, I would hate to have to be on trial in one of those courts, because I think I'd be in very, very great trouble, because these guys are left-wingers, and they are activists, and we talk about activist judges. The D.C. has a reputation of being out of their mind left. Is that an incorrect perception?
No, it's a correct perception. And when think of the situation with Matthew Perna. Matthew Perna is the January 6th defendant who recently took his life, unfortunately. Right. Soul. And he was going to plead out to a lesser charge, a charge that, some people think, whatever it is, his lawyer worked him out a deal, and the prosecution is supposed to uphold their end of the deal. And then in the 11th hour, they decided that they were going to hit him, who he did nothing. This was a guy who traveled the world to teach people English. He's one of the most, nice and docile people you could have ever met. I've spoken to multiple members of his family. Hear nothing but great things about the guy. Just a really, really nice and gentle soul. He went there that day, was not violent at all. Worked out a deal. Prosecution decided not to honor the deal, and in the 11th hour, said that they were going to hit him with what's called a terrorism enhancement, which would have bumped his chargeable points up under the sentencing scale by 8 points, and his, deal of little time in jail quickly went to a lot of time in jail. And it was so overwhelming for him that he hung himself. That's what we're talking about here. That's the level of unfairness that is happening with these cases.
Well, this is going to be, if it is not already, an act of injustice on the part of the U.S. government that will live in infamy. It is, to me, it's astounding What you're saying, what I have heard from, as I said, others, I cannot imagine where this leads, because it's going to require, it's a political act, this persecution, this prosecution of these people, it seems to me. There are incidents, I suppose, of actual violence against a police officer by an individual. I don't know. But what I have seen on video, what I witnessed that day, was a mob that got away from itself and lost control and entered the Capitol. But, you know, and I was first astonished that people were scaling the walls of the building. That's the first thing that I reacted to. You know, the second thing I reacted to was the police officers, and I guess this is on the west side of the Capitol, were basically escorting people, not escorting them, they were waving them in, or at least, you know, indicating that there's no resistance to their entry. It was a peculiar moment to see as it happened. But you've got all of that video, Joe. The video has to be worth something in a court, even in D.C.
Yes, it does. It does have to be worth something. And what it's worth, I guess we're going to find out. A lot of people seem to think that, just because you're having the case heard in D.C., that's a foregone conclusion that you're going to lose at trial. And look, in my cases, where there's police brutality, where there are men acting in defense of themselves and in defense of other people who are being beaten up by the police. You know, we had a big argument the other day on this listserv that all the lawyers are on. It's, you know, you have a small group of sort of America First minded lawyers and then a bunch of rabid liberals on there. And I was going back and forth with them. And I said, listen, I'm not really that concerned with trying my case in front of a bunch of African-American and all Latino jurors who are well understood, well-equipped, well-acquainted with the fact that the government in this country can be unfair, that the government in this country, that officers can show up to your community, throw somebody a beating, and then when somebody else steps in and says, hey, don't beat my cousin, they beat them too, and everybody goes to jail. That's par for the course when you come from these communities. What I'm concerned with is your, you know, a liberal import or implant from, California or Wisconsin or whatever it is, those people who do not respect this Constitution, those people who actually do not love our country, those people who are incapable of putting aside their own political ideologies in favor of justice. And when you come from whether you're a minority in this country or whether you're a non-minority who's experienced a fair amount of suffering in life, when you come from a point where you've suffered in this world, no matter what, you don't want to be the author of somebody else's pain. And so when you're in court and the facts are laid before you, you're not going to want to send somebody to jail simply because you disagree with their politics. Good people and people who have suffered don't do that. It's the other people, the people who don't know suffering, the people who don't love this country, the people who can't put away their politics, who are the true danger to justice in that courtroom.
Wow. And as you put it, the community there, is, if you will, the check on the power of the judges themselves and the prosecutors themselves, as you express it, and you're comfortable with that that perspective.
Yes, I'm comfortable with this, with the perspective of good people who, when you put I say it again, especially minorities. You know, I'd rather try a case about involving police brutality in front of an African-American jury any day than I would a bunch of white liberals from California, because one group has experience with this and the other group doesn't.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. And so how many people are still in jail, would you say, Joe?
I think the number's going up a little bit. I know there was another series of raids and arrests this past few days that just happened. I got a bunch of calls from people saying the FBI is kicking in my front door. And I think actually the last time I spoke to you was the same thing. So they're still arresting people. I want to say there is approximately 80, 85 people who are in right now.
That's amazing. And most of them have been there. It sounds like most of them have been there from early days in this prosecution of those arrested.
Yeah, a lot of people have been there early on. I mean, Ryan Nichols has been there since January the 18th. And Christopher Quaglin has been there since April 7th of 2021.
Apparently, there are waves of these raids that take place across the country. Tell us about Chris. I know that Chris Quaglin has got medical issues. He's got other issues. You filed a petition for habeas corpus. Tell us about his case and what you're doing for him.
Sure. So Christopher Quaglin he's a guy from New Jersey. You're all-American guy who will do anything for his neighbor, anything for his friend. No criminal record or prior history of violence before the 6th of January. He has he was diagnosed with celiac disease at 10 years old. He's got a severe case of it. And for those who don't know what celiac disease is, it's I'm no doctor, so I'm sure there's people out there listening who are far better to explain this than me. But he has a serious allergy to wheat and gluten. And in his case, if he ingests it, it gives him a host of different types of manifestations of problems, whether it's bleeding through his rectum, throwing up, losing weight. At some point, your white blood cells or parts of your body begin to attack other parts of your body, especially in your digestive tract. And it can lead to you being emaciated, extremely weak. It's an autoimmune disease. So the more it affects you, the more it makes you susceptible to other things. It shoots your level. Your susceptibility to getting cancer and other things goes through the roof. It's excruciatingly painful for those who live with it unchecked. Normally, people who have celiac disease, they just live on a gluten-free diet, no gluten, and they're okay for most of the time. Sometimes things can get cross-contaminated and they get sick. In Christopher's case, the jails have been on alert, and he's been marked as a celiac person since the moment he's shown up. But for whatever reason, they have not. What first started as negligence, and then us complaining about it and say, hey, you guys are being negligent here, and his care has progressed into outright torture. He's been marked as somebody who's a complainer and a whiner, but the guy's not a complainer and a whiner. He's somebody who's living in a perpetual state of pain. He's been living in pain for the past year. At this very moment, he's locked up in solitary confinement in Northern Neck Regional Jail in Warsaw, Virginia. He's got 8 stitches in the side of his face. He's down 40 pounds. He hasn't been fed a non-celiac. He hasn't been fed a celiac safe diet ever. He's got grave risk of dying and or having serious complications from his condition. And because of that, we filed a motion for habeas corpus, asking the court to produce his body, to take a look at him and to release him from pretrial detention because he's being detained illegally. And we allege 5 claims. And the first claim that we allege is deliberate indifference to his medical condition. And if you can prove it, deliberate indifference, meaning that the jail doesn't care about his condition, and not only did they not care, they're making it worse, that he should be able to get out. So that's one of the 5 claims that we're alleging. It's a really strong claim. We have overwhelming evidence of guilt. Inside the body of the motion, if anybody wants to see the motion, they can just go to my Twitter feed. It's McBride Law NYC. I can share it with you guys as well, but I posted it there. Inside of the body of the motion are multiple exchanges between myself and Ted Hull. Ted Hull is the superintendent or the warden of that jail, where he straight up tells me, your client's going to get what he's going to get, and that's going to be the end of it. And if you don't like it, sue me. And I basically tell him at the end, I'm going to sue you. And now we're doing it.
Well, good. And by the way, shouldn't you be, this is all under the Federal Bureau of Prisons, is it not?
Technically it is. So Merrick Garland is named in the suit, and then Ted Hull is named as well. Merrick Garland being the guy who's obviously in charge of the Department of Justice, U.S. Marshals, so on and so forth, are under him. And then Ted Hull being his immediate custodian. The way it works with some of these other jails is this is a hybrid jail. This is not like a pure Bureau of Prisons place where it's just federal guys. Right. This is a hybrid place where there are state people and there are federal people being held. The problem with that is there should be a section of the jail where detainees exclusively are held, because you're not allowed to subject detainees to the conditions that convicted inmates are. But did they do that there? No, they don't. And to add insult to injury, because we've been outspoken about Christopher's condition and about his mistreatment, they put him routinely in the most violent places inside of that prison. And because of that, that's why he's got 8 stitches inside of his face, because he was assaulted by a leader in an international gang who beat the daylights out of him. And then they put him in solitary confinement because of it. They put Chris in solitary confinement. And then
in an American prison.
Oh, Lou. Yes. Yes, in an American prison. I'm rambling about it.
No, you're not at all. You're not at all. You're telling an important story, and we are deeply appreciative. I just have to say, I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I am pro law and order, pro police and law enforcement. But I'm also pro citizen, Constitution, and the rights of every individual in this country. And I am outraged just to think about what is happening to a citizen of this country who I just cannot understand why you don't sue the dickens out of every one of those people and the Bureau of Prisons. Isn't there some relief you can get?
Oh, yeah. So first, we're starting with the habeas relief, because we're trying to get him the hell out of there. And we didn't want to complicate it with a civil suit, a 1983 suit, or a federal torts claim act suit against the jail and the members who are hurting him. But yes, the answer is yes, we can sue them civilly for damages. We certainly will. But our first overarching concern is to get him out of there. And that's why, you know, we drilled down so hard on this. They're not allowed to punish people who are pretrial detainees. You can only punish somebody who's been convicted of a crime. So you're only merely allowed to hold a pretrial detainee. This is beyond punishment. This is cruel and unusual punishment. It's deliberate indifference to his medical condition. It's prolonged solitary confinement that violates the Fifth and Eighth Amendments. And on top of that, guess what, Lou? Despite the fact that I've dropped his discovery off, I dropped his discovery off to him early last year, he's never seen the discovery in his case. He's never seen once for a minute, seen the evidence against him. And that's got nothing to do with me. I go through the process. I bring it to the respective, jails. And I say, here's his discovery. Let him see it. They've never let him see it. It's inexcusable. Not only that, they have developed 2 new systems now called evidence.com and the relativity. Those are on the tablets. These tablets are routinely given to the pretrial detainees so they can go over their discovery. One's never been given to Christopher either. So there are multiple avenues of approach to get him his discovery. They've never once done that either, because they want to punish and intimidate him and make him feel hopeless. And this is another reason why we're trying to get him out.
Do you have the names of everyone involved in his mistreatment? The guards, the wardens, the whomever?
That's a great question. So the way that it works is, I don't want to give it all away here, but
I understand.
Lots of people will reach out to me, or they'll send me an email, they'll send me a snail mail, or they will call me on the phone. One would think that he could just get on the phone and say, hey, such and such guard did this to me, such and such guard did that to me. Every time he does that, they throw him back in the hole. Because you know why? They're listening to his attorney-client privilege calls.
That's outrageous. I mean, my blood is boiling as you're saying this, and I'm sure everyone else's is as well, to think that this is going on. Where is this jail again?
Warsaw, Virginia. It's Central Virginia.
You would think that anyone listening to us who was a federal authority, a U.S. attorney, a judge would demand that this be investigated immediately, not wait for legal service and process and complaints or filing a habeas corpus. There should be someone with the decency to get involved and get this fixed. Can you go to the governor of Virginia, Youngkin, and say, Governor, I need help here for my client? This is outrageous. I just can't believe that there aren't enough decent people in Virginia in office and who have authority and power there who would intervene on behalf of your client.
You know, it's a good idea. We have been making some inroads with people. I think a big part of it is that people don't believe what I'm saying. They think it's hyperbolic, that I'm exaggerating, that I'm just, you know, I'm doing a good job for my clients by making something that seems, you know, from turning a molehill into a mountain, so to speak. People have a hard time accepting the fact that what is happening is indeed happening in our jails. It's something that has been happening for a long time. I mean, to be fair, the Black and Latino community has been saying for a very long time in this country, hey, you know, we're not getting a fair shake in jail. It's pretty messed up in there. And I think most people just didn't believe. But now that people's eyes are beginning to be opened, they're not only realizing that this is happening now, they're also realizing that it's been happening for a long time. And in that vein, I have been working with members in Congress, in particular Louis Gohmert's office, who, what a stand-up guy he is. He's just an
Louis awesome. Gohmert is a great American.
He is a great American. And what we are working on is a bill to ban the use of solitary confinement at the national level, for us to say that, look, the international community already prolonged solitary confinement is recognized as torture by the international community. That solitary confinement for more than 15 days, torture. It also, the HALT Act in New York State bans prolonged solitary confinement. And both international law and the HALT Act say if you have a serious medical condition, if you have a serious psychiatric condition, if you're pregnant, if you're over 55, if you're under 21, and a couple other reasons, you should not be in solitary for any period of time, not even a day. So we are trying to proffer legislation at the federal level to ban solitary confinement across the board. Will it help January 6th detainees? Of course. But who's it going to help more? It's going to help more of the Black and Latino community who are overpopulated in solitary confinement in America's prisons right now. So it is our hope that people from across the aisle will want to work on this bipartisan issue that's going to help members of their constituency, as well as members of Mr. Gohmert's, so on and so forth. And we seem to be gaining some traction already. And it'll be interesting to see if out of this great evil, something good can ultimately come from it.
And your client is where right now?
Christopher Quaglin is in Northern Neck Regional Jail. That's in Warsaw, Virginia. And Ryan Nichols is in DC jail, a CTF section of DC jail.
And is he also in solitary confinement?
Ryan's actually in solitary confinement at this very moment. I believe that Ryan is being retaliated against because of me, unfortunately. I had the opportunity to actually speak with him earlier today. Ryan is a decorated military veteran, honorably discharged from the Marine Corps. Was famous for making Ellen DeGeneres' show for his nonprofit Rescue the Universe, where he rescues, people who are stranded from natural disasters and animals as well. No prior history of violence. He has documented PTSD. He's got PTSD. His PTSD has been treated for many years now, I think since maybe 2012 or 14. And the fact that they're putting him in solitary confinement for no reason whatsoever is not only shocking, it's torture, because if you have a pre-existing medical condition such as PTSD, you should never be put in solitary confinement. the suicide rate for veterans with PTSD is already very high. You're asking this guy to kill himself when you put him in solitary confinement for weeks at a time. It's wrong.
What did Mr. Hull say when you brought these concerns to him?
Mr. Hull does not care at all. I have had, it's right there laid out in the motion. It's crazy. I've literally had conversations with him and says, hey, I'm telling you, you repeatedly refer to Christopher Quaglin as an inmate. He is not an inmate. He's a pretrial detainee. And as such, you cannot punish him. He will literally write back in bold, inmate Quaglin is going to get what's coming to him. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he actually says inmate Quaglin, and he's saying that we are punishing him in accordance with how we punish all inmates. And he either is refusing or is purposely making fun of me. But what he is saying in that letter is I am refusing as the warden of this jail to recognize the nuance, to recognize the distinction between a pretrial detainee and a convicted person. I'm going to treat him as if he is convicted, and I'm going to do it because you can't do anything about it, Joe McBride. Well, guess what? We just did something about it. And his emails and his writings and all the things that he has said he's going to have to be held accountable for that in court. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the judge has to say about his actions.
Have you talked to the Marine Corps Association about doing something for not just the Marine Corps, because he is a former Marine, the Marine Association, any of the veterans groups, American Legion, whatever, to bring to bear the treatment of these veterans? I mean, we watched President Trump clean up the VA and do his level best, and he got a lot done, but we know there are still great problems. And to abandon our veterans, whatever he did, he still is entitled to his, I'm saying this to you, of course, Joe, you're fighting for his rights every day, but I can't imagine that there aren't organizations and associations who will say to the Bureau of Prisons and to the Justice Department, what are you doing to American citizens? It's outrageous.
It is.
I mean, I'm saying this. I don't know whether he's guilty or innocent. I don't know what will be found. But I do know he's an American citizen. What difference does anything else make? He has to be treated with respect, with his rights. You know, nobody has to, genuflect around him. I'm not suggesting that or coddle him. But the fact is, you're talking about basic decency here, let alone fundamental American rights.
That is right, Lou. You're very correct in everything you're saying with regard to the veterans. At Ease Veterans Magazine, they did a recent publication that they featured my work and some other January 6th lawyers' work. They gave us about four pages in the magazine. Soldier of Fortune and a bunch of others have covered my work. I just think that there is a sense of fear in the community for anybody who works for the government or is associated with the government, that if you step out and speak out against this, that they're gonna come for you too. And you know, we'll circle back to what you said in the beginning of this talk today, that there was a guy you spoke to, another lawyer, and his guy was out, the FBI interviewed him, he complied, and then all of a sudden he came and they sent him to trial because they will come for you if you speak out, right? So this is the kind of Gestapo tactics that they're using to chill free speech and to accomplish their very divisive goals of making sure that if you are a right-leaning Republican, especially a Christian Republican, that they're going to shut you down and lock you up.
Well, to be honest with you, I know that we've been, my wife and I have been, surveilled or wiretapped, whatever you want to call it. We know that there, that the federal government has been, I should be more specific, the State Department has asked for us to be monitored, for crying out loud. But you can't live in fear. And if we've reached the point where we have to fear this government, we're going to have a new government. This is just outrageous. I cannot comprehend why, how we got here. I don't know. The only person killed on January 6th was one of the protesters. And she, you know, it's one of the ugliest things I've ever witnessed. We all saw it, as they say, live and in living color on television, watching this woman be shot dead. And nothing happened. There was no due process. Her rights were just totally ignored. We've reached a point of such political corruption. This, you could rationalize this. You can analyze it. You can. It's just brutal. And it was straight up murder. She was unarmed, and the police officer is dismissed to the background. They wouldn't even give his name for what, 4 or 5 months. And they're doing this to people who are charged with being in the wrong place effectively at the wrong time. Your thoughts?
I agree with everything you said, Lou. And, you know, the fact that when you look at the Declaration of Independence and you read it and you read the Constitution and you think about why it was written and who it was written by, you know, by men who lived during times like these, who wrote it for times like these. And when you think about the fact that the mere attempt to actually meaningfully exercise these rights in the world that we live in today can get you canceled, spied on, thrown in jail, and potentially killed, it really, really makes you ask the question of, you know, whose country are we living in anymore? And I just don't know anymore. The America that I was born into, the America that you were born into, I don't want to say she doesn't exist anymore, but it almost feels like that she's in solitary confinement. And unless something happens in our political leadership and unless something else happens in our faith-based communities, I am terribly worried what the next few years may entail. And I'm just not sure if we can survive this. When we're talking about people like you and your wife being surveilled, when we're talking about men with no criminal records being held and tortured in jail simply for their politics and their political beliefs, when you're talking about the absolute and outright selling out of our country to communist China and the provoking of wars in other parts of the world that we have no business being in, you really have to say, what the hell is happening? And it's, you know, all these things have happened before, but they've never happened all at once. And it's all happening at once right now. And, you know, I do believe in my heart that America was created by God, that, like, you know, Israel and you know, it was set apart by God as a special place. And I just in my heart, I don't believe that God will forsake us. But I'm damn worried about it. I got to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think most of us, Joe, I think most of us are in the same place with the same, frankly, heart-wrenching fears for our country and for our fellow citizens. Because what we're witnessing on the part of, and this is not partisanship, it's just straightforward fact. What we're witnessing on the part of the Democratic Party is anathema to everything this country stands for. This should be a bipartisan issue, but there's no such thing as bipartisan, because the left is behind this evil that is taking place right now. They are demanding that it be treated, you're talking about something from a molehill. They're talking about calling all of this an insurrection. Not a single gun, as far as I know, has been found on anyone with the purpose of taking charge of the Capitol or to change of government as a result of their protests. I mean, it's really outrageous and ignorant. And the national media is no recourse for you or for your clients, because they're crooked and corrupt and fully aligned with the Marxist left that is the Democratic Party, aren't they?
Yeah, of course they are. Of course they are. The media is very much aligned with them and very much unaligned with our Constitution. And they, it's just not right. There needs to be different journalistic standards. People talk about misinformation. The people who are who are indoctrinating everybody with misinformation are the ones who are most guilty of it. And they're trying to suppress and steal our God-given right to freely express our objections to it. Everything is upside down. And, you know, everything needs to find its way right side up. And Lou, I don't know how we get there.
The trials that are taking place of those charged, those trials began. Where do we stand on those trials? And what are your thoughts about how they've been prosecuted and defended to this point?
I mean, the trials are just really still in their beginning stages. Most of the trials have ended in guilty verdicts, which is unfortunate. I do think some of the more difficult ones are still yet to come. I also think that those who go first in these cases, they're kind of test tube babies, so to speak. I don't know if that's the right term, but they're the test cases, the literal test cases for sure. I think that as we get closer to the midterms, that the politics the politics have to change. I know at least for those who are running in conservative districts or Republican districts or districts that are swing districts, that January 6th and election integrity are the two big issues. So I think because of the fact that constituents and people are fed up with the way these people are being treated, and it's going to have an effect on the judicial system, because unfortunately that's just the way the judicial system works at this point. Public pressure, even though it shouldn't make a difference, does make a difference. I know in our cases that we're going to fight like we've never fought before, that some of our facts were letting out into the universe. Other things we're playing a little bit tighter to the vest. We're trying to be as strategic as possible to make sure that each one of our clients get their fair day in court. In terms of misdemeanor cases versus felonies, look, my guys who have been in jail have already done the time on the misdemeanors. So I have no problem going into a courtroom and conceding misdemeanors to give the jury something to hang its hat on, just for the sheer fact that we can beat these overcharged felonies. I won't be able to say in Ryan Nichols' case that he didn't go into the Capitol. He did go into the Capitol. But did he go into the Capitol and commit a felony? No, he did not. So that would make his entrance into the Capitol a misdemeanor. If you want to convict him on that, go right ahead. We'll call it a day. But does he belong in jail for 20 years? Absolutely not. It's my hope that a jury of fair-minded and rational people will be able to see that exactly for what it is and put cases like his to bed sooner than later.
And he's in jail for already a year.
That's right. At this moment.
Astounding. I would say to Chief Justice Roberts, if you happen to be listening, what is your court system doing and why aren't you making it what it should be, something that Americans can be proud of instead of ashamed of? It's just disgusting what has happened. Joe McBride, you're a great American. You're doing the Lord's work, you know that, and you're doing it with an inner strength that not many of us have. And I know how much of a test this must be for you every day, as well as, of course, your clients who have suffered injustice for a very long time. I hope that you find them justice and freedom soon. And I hope everyone who's been arrested in this, the protesters, the demonstrators who now stand charged for being at the Capitol and in the Capitol, it's just a sad moment in American history. And we need to end the sadness and make right the wrongs that have been committed. In this case, more wrongs by our government than by these charged defendants, in my opinion. Joe McBride, thank you so much. Your website again, for those who want to help and learn more about the tests that these people are contending with.
Sure. It's McBrideLawNYC.com.
McBrideLawNYC.com. Joe McBride, thanks so much for being with us. God bless you.
God bless you too, Lou.
Thank you. God bless you, Joe. This country is in a terrible state, and we have to right this ship, make right the wrongs of our government, because corruption is rampant in that federal government, and it is, make no mistake, ruinous and destructive of the spirit of our nation and our great people. Thank you, everybody, for being with us today. Tomorrow, we'll continue our look at what is happening to the January 6th defendants, the police who bear great responsibility for that day, and the January 6th committee itself, and the radical Dems who persecute these fellow Americans. American Greatness reporter Julie Kelly will be with us tomorrow. Please join us. We want to invite you to sign up for our Great America Show Advisory and Newsletter. Simply go to loudobbs.com, that's loudobbs.com, and click on the email newsletter button. It's as simple as that. And we'll send you our advisories and alerts, as well as our weekly newsletter. I don't want to overstate anything, but I'm pretty sure you will absolutely sense at least a small positive change in your world outlook. We invite you to join us and stay in touch. Thank you. That's loudobbs.com. Thanks. God bless you, and God bless America.